The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and/or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
TV party tonight! What? TV party tonight!
Oh, we got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated, yes,
to our favorite shows.
Oh, my tickets!
Everybody loves Hypnotoad!
Gary Dawg!
Larson at Blurnville!
Futurama!
Hello, good evening, and welcome to TV Party Tonight. I am your host, Alexis Haina, coming to you from beyond the void. Or maybe I'm just isolating myself away from the mushroom attack. I don't know. You know, it's kind of funny. I belong to groups who just love everything in like fairy and fantasy culture, and they always go on and on about how much they love mushrooms. You see, this massive increase in demand for just anything that is shaped like a mushroom. I see mushroom teapots and mushroom salt and pepper shakers and, you know, all these just cute little mushroom things. And then you watch The Last of Us and it's like, joke's on you. The mushrooms are coming for you.
I'm not touching that comment, but we'll just roll with it.
Fair enough. Tonight we are talking about The Last of Us. This is the hit TV show based off of the 2013 video game developed by Naughty Dog. Series is set in 2023, 20 years into a pandemic caused by a mass fungal infection. The series follows our lead characters, Joel, a smuggler tasked with escorting the teenage Ellie across a post-apocalyptic United States. This aired on HBO Max. This was talked about for a long, long time. Everyone was so excited that the game was going to get adapted, and we were so excited about what was going to come out of it. So we are here to discuss all 9 episodes, what we thought of them, how we feel they compare to the game, for those in this group who actually did play the game, and what we think we could expect out of Season 2. So joining me tonight, my co-host from Tripto Trivia, Mr. Jesse Starcher, who's going by Cordy Starch.
Cordy Starch. We got the Cordyceps. I went with the Cordystarch. Had to quickly change my name to something that at least rang in here with The Last of Us. So, yeah, hey, good to join. Good to join you here, Alexis, and talk about The Last of Us, a show that, boy, I had some expectation for, but it blew those expectations out of the water, in my opinion. So it'd be fun to talk about tonight.
Absolutely. Also, if you listened to our show last night, you heard him discussing Scream 6 with the rest of us. One of our frequent collaborators when it comes to talking horror, Mr. Jason Teasley.
I'm glad to be back. It seems like it's been way too long since me and you have spoke. Definitely ready to dive into this. I was really hesitant to come on. I didn't know if we'd have a full panel or not, so I'm glad that I was able to join in and discuss this hit TV show.
And also joining us, one of our frequent guests from Geek News Now, Mr. Andrew Orozco, looking insanely dapper tonight, Mr. Orozco. You look so suave.
You're muted, bro.
My bad.
Suave just went out the window.
Yeah, it's like your suaveness just got down a few points, man. You're muted again.
Sorry, I was scrambling because the cord fell out of my mic. And I was like, oh, no, it
works. You're good, man.
Sorry. Alexis, but thanks for having me on again for something.
All right. Now, before we get started, let's go ahead and get a few things out of the way here. Raise your hand if you played the game or a little bit more familiar with the game than, let's just say, the average viewer. Okay, Sora, two at the bottom here. Okay, Andrew, I want to start with you. Tell me, as someone who played the game, when you heard that this was announced, what did you think? What were you expecting out of this?
At first, I had the reaction of like, oh no, this is a bad idea. And then I saw HBO, and I was like, okay. And I remember this is Naughty Dog. And then I saw that Neil Druckmann, the creator of the game, was involved, and I was like, Okay, that's two for two. Those are good signs. That's good signs. Neil Druckmann's like a terrific storyteller, and the people over at HBO, they do not miss, except for season 8 of Game of Thrones. Other than that, they do not miss. So
you don't talk about season 8, bro.
So other than that, I'm like, oh, this could be good. This is gonna be good. But also, like, I was expecting it to be decent. I'm like, okay, it's not gonna be as good as a game. Like, it's gonna be just decent. And then, like, probably about after episode 3, I was like, oh, this is gonna be better than the game. And I was mostly right, I think.
All right. Jason, go ahead and tell us. You mentioned on the chat about how certain episodes you felt really captured the video game. What was your takeaway? How do you think they did in adapting? I mean, we all know that adapting a video game, especially to a TV show, is incredibly challenging. And there were a lot of people who were clearly afraid that they were going to miss the point or they were going to get stuck on things that didn't matter. What was your takeaway when you started watching this?
I was really hesitant. Coming into this, really hesitant, because it's such a iconic game. I mean, this game is spun a sequel that is lived up or surpassed its predecessor. It's got a great story. It kind of tears you apart in some kind of way because of some moral choices and stuff that you make, which I think they did really well in the series. It held really close, in my opinion, to the game. You got some iconic scenes, visuals that I'm sure we're going to be talking about. But yeah, this was basically a lot of shot for shots from the cinematography from the game. And as soon as I seen that in episode 1, the escape in the truck, I was hooked. I looked at my wife. I was like, you're going to want to play the game. So we were now contemplating buying a PS5, not only for Hogwarts, which she thinks it's for Hogwarts, but it's for me to get the Last of Us 1 and 2 and play through, because I'm a big survival horror fan. Huge. I mean, I'm like the aficionado on Resident Evil. So this had me kind of nervous until I seen that opening scene in the truck. I was hooked, and I've been hooked since then.
Absolutely. My husband, actually, we talked about getting a PS5 for this as well, but he saw that you can play Last of Us. You can download it and play it on a PC. So I think he's just going to go ahead and do that. He spends most of his time on his computer anyway, so it makes a lot more sense to do that. All right. So, Jesse, you told me you haven't played the game, but your son has.
Yeah. So I got one hell of a deal one time on a PlayStation 3 and like a ton of games. And then that was about 2017, I think, 2018. I think it's 2017. And my son wanted to play The Last of Us. I'm certain that it was because he was watching YouTubers go do the playthroughs and stuff. And he bugged my mom, and my mom was like, okay, yeah, sure. So she buys The Last of Us for him, and he plays it. And I mean, he is just barreling through the game and raving to me about how much he loves the game. And then, of course, last year I was like, dude, are you ready? And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, The Last of Us live action TV series. Are you ready? Now, he has experienced The Walking Dead with us. And I can remember, you know, at a young age, he was wanting to watch that. I was like, oh, man. Well, so he's kind of acclimated to kind of watching some of that, violent stuff. So when we sat down and watched The Last of Us, I was so excited, mainly just because he experienced the game. I heard that just how much joy he had playing it, and I couldn't wait to see what they would do with the series. And we watched that first episode, and yeah, man, all of us were like, yeah, we are definitely, so much so that my daughter binged it probably about 2 weeks before the season finale. She heard how we were watching it and was like, I've got to watch this. And then she watched the final episode with us there a couple nights ago. So we try to do it as a family there. Well, you know, try to experience this whole thing as a family. But mainly I went into this because my son dug the video game and I knew he would love to watch it with us. So, yeah.
I also ended up binging this. I missed the chance to watch it weekly because of how busy my schedule got and all the other things that Mark makes me watch for no pay. And I'm just going to say, I don't know if you guys will agree with me or not, but Jesse, we were talking before the show started. This is not a show you want to binge watch. This is a very, very dark, emotional show. It's insanely well done. It's incredibly enjoyable in small doses. You cannot watch this thing all in one setting. Otherwise, you're going to need the stiffest drink on the planet.
Yeah, it is. It is one of those ones that you've got to sit back and digest and kind of mull over what you just watched.
Mm-hmm. It can be a lot.
Yeah. So our two main characters, again, are Joel and Ellie. These are played by Pedro Pascal, who, of course, everyone is currently also watching on Disney Plus in The Mandalorian Season 3. And we got Bella Ramsey, who I believe we had last seen in Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. She had a recurring role in the later seasons. She really made an impact on that, and I think she did a really good job with this. So we find out that Ellie has apparently was bitten weeks ago, and she has not been turned into an infected, a zombie. I don't know what you want to call them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, clicker. Well, before a clicker, I think they call them. Oh shit, I forgot what they call it. But there's like three stages that they go through in the game, and you can kind of see it where like they're initially infected, or they're kind of just rabid zombies,
and then they become clickers.
And then if they live long enough and under the right conditions, they become like our friend over here, a bloater.
The bloater.
Yeah. That's just because I'm a fat kid.
Yeah, we got one look at a bloater in episode 5. It was all practical done due to the suit. It looked incredible. And let's go ahead actually and start off with this. We get a decent amount of zombies, but there was one complaint about this season, and that is that we didn't get a lot of majors. I'm just going to call it zombie fights. I know that fans of the game, and I know for a fact that the showrunners actually didn't use the word zombie. They forbid it on the set because they didn't want it to kind of, they didn't want to fall into traditional zombie stereotypes, and I get that. But just for the sake of getting through without, you know, constantly tripping over our words, we're going to use the word zombie.
It's fine with me.
Yeah,
or infected.
Zombie or infected. That works. But yeah, there was a complaint that there wasn't a lot of zombie fights. We get a couple of decent ones. We get a really great chase in episode 2. We get definitely what I would say is the most memorable scene with them in episode 5. That's when they all burst out of the ground like a freaking
Hellmouth.
Yeah, Hellmouth, zombie volcano, whatever you want to call it. But for the most part, the adversaries that they come across are other humans. We have parties of raiders who are just essentially, you know, they come across someone who's unprotected and they say it's us or them. We come across a vigilante group who have taken over my hometown of Kansas City. I think that was a change from the game. I think it was originally Pittsburgh. And then we also have a freaking cannibal Christian cult led by a pedophile. You know, that's always fun to deal with.
It's a lot to unpack right there.
Yeah. So what do you guys think? Did this show need more fights with the uninfected? Did you want to see more? I mean, obviously the show does not want to turn into The Walking Dead, where it's like, hey, I came for the zombies. Where are the zombies? So what do you think? Did we need more, less? Did you think they hit the right stride with the monster battles? If anyone wants to jump in, please go ahead.
I think for the opening season, they did just enough. They want to let you know that they're out there, give the basic backstory, how the infected come to be infected, and how they kind of hunt and everything, how the clickers kind of maneuver and how they survive. But at the heart of this game, it is not about the infected. They're just an obstacle. They're an obstacle to overcome, but it is really about, you know, saving humanity, and the moral choice. So you have to go through that human aspect. And this is where, you know, The Walking Dead failed miserably. You have that human aspect, but you don't need the infected to be a prominent character. They're there, they're a threat. You have to deal with them, but I don't want to be oversaturated with them where it takes away from key components that we're hopefully seen later on down the line.
Yeah, I would somewhat agree there. I think a lot of what we want in our first season, and I think the primary focus is on the relationship between Ellie and Joel. And yeah, the obstacles that they have to overcome, you know, not only physically, but mentally throughout this whole first season. Joel has to kind of come to try and figure out a way of dealing with his daughter's death. And I think a lot of that is what Ellie helps him do. So, yeah, I do think that in the early seasons of The Walking Dead, they focused on the human condition a little bit, at least a little bit more, not about a little bit more, but a little bit better, in my opinion. But we all wanted zombies back then. And
yeah,
we don't want to throw all these zombies and just, we got a second season we got to prepare for. We can't just throw it all out there in the first season. And I, that's where I think they did fine. We got a taste of what's out there. And at some point, maybe we'll get something more, some bigger baddie out there that's going to be showing up.
Yeah, I'm going to be the lone dissenting voice here. I was one of the few people who, or I don't know how many people actually, but I was one of the people who kind of initially complained that there wasn't enough of the infected. There wasn't enough clickers. And then I kind of thought about it after a while about the game and like how it would have been so easy to screw up this adaptation, mm-hmm. because there a lot of the gameplay elements from the actual game are kind of missing. Like, you don't have the constant like having to deal with the clickers. There's definitely a lot of more bloaters in the game than there is in the show. And I'm thinking of like all the stuff that was kind of like a slog, like puzzles and like navigating and like, you know, shimmying across a path or under lifting a rock. Take out all the unnecessary like fat. They cut all the fat out. And I guess that doesn't in a way extend to the clickers, where like we didn't need them all the time. We didn't need to see them, but I would have liked to at least have seen some corpses here and there. Like, oh, they're like, there were clickers that were here, like, you know, a couple of bodies strewn around just to remind us. Cause I think there's a couple episodes where you don't even see a single infected at all.
Right.
I think
right.
there was a handful of episodes where you don't see them at all. So like just the reminder that, you know, maybe we can have like a corpse there or like a tendril or fungal tendril over here, something to kind of just keep them like in our mind. But, yeah, by not, I mean, there's only 9 episodes. Maybe the show was like 12 episodes or a little bit longer, than you could have, you know, thrown in a couple more clickers here and there. But the fact that they, I kind of came around a little bit on it where like, yeah, I get why they didn't want to just throw them in there. They didn't want to get the zombie comparisons. And then like, it really wouldn't have added that much story wise to what's going on. I think it just would have been nice for some of the slightly like slower levels where, I mean, slower episodes where people were kind of like, they're like, ah, like this is boring kind of thing. I wish they threw it in there to kind of just, you know, maybe 10% more clickers or something would have been nice.
But this is, I'm just going to pose this question. Cause like I said, you know, you're going to draw the Walking Dead comparisons, and in the early seasons of the Walking Dead, you were forced with a lot of zombies. You've seen a lot of zombies throughout the first couple of seasons, and I think it kind of, when you get into some of the actual storytelling, if you kind of see all the zombies, you lose some of the storytelling. And then when the storytelling that needs to take place, like, you know, in The Walking Dead later season, when they're dealing with, you know, the governor, the, you know, especially with Negan, you have that zombie aspect there, like I said, as something that would come. But it's so oversaturated, you're like, oh, there's zombies. There's really no threat. Now, this, like having them in the background, I feel, keeps them as a threat without overexposure.
Okay, good points all. So I'm going to avoid talking about us going episode to episode because I don't want this to become just a repetitive case of, oh, that was good. Oh, that was good. I obviously, we don't want to do that. And Andrew, I know we got you for a limited time tonight, but there are a couple of moments and a couple episodes I do want to talk about. And the first one I want to talk about is episode 3. This was, see, again, I did not get a chance to watch episode 3 when it debuted. I had other things I had to take care of. I've been crazy busy for the last 2 months.
I'm sure you heard about it, though, because yes, man, did it just like wildfire.
Yeah, just a touch on maybe some, you know, obscure news reference. No, I could not escape people talking about this episode. And it's interesting because it is entirely superfluous to the actual game and really to the plot itself. In the game, we had the two guys, Bill and Frank, who Joel and Ellie are going off to get some supplies. And we do meet Bill in the game, and we see Frank's body. We don't actually get to meet Frank. He is sadly dead by the time we see him in the game. And their relationship is kind of hinted at. It's mentioned a little bit. In the game. The game. We got an entire hour-long episode about these two men meeting, falling in love, and actually having an amazing life together in a post-apocalyptic world. And we get to see how they meet Joel and his girlfriend Tess, and how they make how they survive and what they mean to each other. And there's not a dry eye in the house by the end of this episode. It was so moving. So I want to talk to you guys. Jesse, you go ahead and go first. Again, this episode could have been completely cut out plot-wise, and no one would have missed a thing, moving from point A to point B. What did you think?
Yeah, so, you know, this is probably one of the episodes where if you weren't a player of the game, you wouldn't be drawing like comparisons to the game, obviously, because this is something that is not really even touched on. It's like they took a kernel of what was in the game, and then here's a whole 90 or hour episode dedicated to what happened with these two people. So as for myself, one of the standout episodes of this season, it was something to watch, these people just kind of what is our bearded character's name here? Actually, both of them have beards. Who is the guy from the remember his name. Ron Swanson. Nick Offerman. To watch him, he's this doomsday prepper and he is ready to go. And he's got his whole town by himself. And then to see where he finally finds love after everything's hit the fan and a guy who fell in a hole. it was really moving. I really, really enjoyed it. And I could understand why a lot of people were talking about this episode, because it did hit a lot of chords. And it was, kudos. I think they took a risk, honestly, but from what I understand, the creator was perfectly, all on board for this. I think the risk they took was paid off, in my opinion. So great episode.
All right. Jason, what did you think of episode 3?
I thought it was well done. I thought they handled the subject matter very delicately in a way that expounded on the relationship that you come across in the game. I could have seen it when I first read about it. With a lot of shows today, this is going to probably piss a lot of people off, which I don't care. A lot of things you feel like they're pushing an agenda. This, I didn't feel that way. I felt that they wanted to show the relationship. They handled it superbly with how they showed the human side. It wasn't like I didn't feel that the relationship was forced to get an agenda across. I thought it was very organic. It was very from the heart. And we're going to talk about a forced narrative a little later on. But this was organic. This was very moving. It was very touching, especially when you get later on and he's in the wheelchair and he's not able to really take care of himself. You see the love. You see the relationship. And they had, and to portray two gay men, they had chemistry together. That's what was really weird, is because you could see this as being, okay, you got to play a gay character. You're playing a gay character. And it comes off very robotic. They had chemistry together. That's what is where I think this was very, very well done. To portray the delicate subject, to kind of show the actual emotion and love, and to just draw your audience in to make them care about the characters, because in essence, that's what this game, the show, is all about. You have to be invested in these characters, and to see the tragic end and how it plays out. Like you said, it kind of gets you, it hits you in the feels, it hits all the right notes, and I think it was a very, probably the second best episode of this season.
All right. Andrew, I actually want to hit you with a slightly different question since you played the game. Again, we have these characters who are briefly mentioned. Bill gets a little time in the game, not that much. Frank, we never actually talk to, and we get a whole episode. We have a lot of characters from the game who fit that exact same criteria. Joel and Ellie meet, briefly talk to, and then they're on their way. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get a lot more of those in the second game. What do you think about the idea of more episodes like this in the upcoming seasons? Sort of more little, Jesse put, little kernels that we just...
Like a vignette, kind of?
Yeah, exactly. What do you think about more episodes like this?
I don't think it's such a bad idea. I don't mind that. The whole Bill and Frank episode, I absolutely loved. I remember I heard about it before, like they said, like, oh, the third episode's gonna be about Bill and Frank, and I'm like, that sounds kind of boring. And then to get through that, and it's like, oh my god, that destroyed me. So I wouldn't mind to see, maybe, like, I was thinking about something similar when we were introduced to Sam and Henry. I'm like, I would like to see, like, the stuff leading up to them being chased by the rest of the rebels or whatever. Like, I mean, he kind of explains what happened, like why they're chasing him. But I'm like, I would have liked to have seen some of that. So I think looking forward, thinking of the secondary characters, like in the second game, I have a couple ideas of who I would like to see like a little bit more of. So I'm not opposed to it. I would maybe hope the next season's longer than 9 episodes. Mm-hmm. I would hope. But,
well, it's going to have to be. I mean, how much is in the second game,
I say that
right?
Because I say that because the show writer and Neil Druckmann both said that the second game was going to be split between season 2 and 3.
That makes sense.
So they're going to have more time, I guess, to kind of like, you know, meander a little bit. So, yeah, I hope they do more of these kinds of where it makes sense and like not every other episode, obviously. So. Yeah, if they can just do the pace, if they can pace it out right. Yeah, I would like to see that.
Like a few filler episodes to expound on some of the more noteworthy characters that you don't really get a backstory in the game for.
Like kind of like the Book of Boba Fett, but done better. Not two episodes back to back kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm with you actually with the Sam and Henry bit, because that would, I'm not going to lie. The guy who plays Henry does a great job, and the kid who plays Sam is wonderful. What did you guys think about the decision to make Sam deaf in real? Because he wasn't deaf in the game, right? Yeah,
no.
I didn't think so.
No,
he isn't.
I thought it was a great choice. I mean, because you, and this is going to sound really off-putting, you have people with disabilities. You can't exclude them, thinking that in a post-apocalyptic world they don't exist. So bringing that to the forefront, I thought was a really important thing, and having him actually, because it not only shows with Ellie, it shows the audience that, you know, there's people out there that's struggling with the world falling around part of, around them on top of their everyday life in general. If the world wasn't going to hell, they still had these struggles to overcome. So I thought that was a really good twist on it to show that, you know, there are people struggling in their everyday life without having to be in a post-apocalyptic world.
Very true. But yeah, going back to what I was saying, we get a speech from Henry when he's talking to Joel. He talks about, he's like, you know, I told you I never killed someone. Well, I did. And he talks about what has led to him being the most wanted man in Kansas City. The fact that the Fedra authorities in Kansas City were so totalitarian that they were withholding medicine for Sam's leukemia. And they said, basically, they told him, like, you want the medicine, you got to give us something big for it. And he had no choice. He ratted out the leader of the resistance to get medicine for his brother. And I would have really liked to have seen, again, as great as that scene is and as well done as the as it is with the actors, I think I would have preferred to see it actually as it happened. You know, even in just half an episode with a flashback, especially since we hear more about how the federal authorities there have gone just total mad with power and they're just, you know, insane Nazism and whatever. We hear about how they were just horrible and we see the rebellion with the authorities getting the living shit kicked out of them at the beginning of episode 5, which was a little off-putting, I'm not going to lie. But I think it would have been better to see the buildup of that just a touch.
Yeah, I definitely think that this season could have been at least another 4 episodes where you could just throw in some backstory for some people. And I don't know if the intent was, hey, let's 9 episodes, quickly get it out there. And there's a specific reason for that. But I mean, one of my biggest complaints about the season is the going from the second to last episode to the last episode, I felt like there should have been like 3 episodes in between that. Really felt like a swing. So yeah, some backstory on some of these characters would have been great. I would have loved it.
I was thinking about that when I think when we saw the runtime for the last episode being like 40 minutes or something, I'm like how? Like, we're not even there yet. Like, how can it be 40 minutes?
Yeah.
Like, you haven't reached the university, or I'm sorry, the like wherever their camp is. And so like, I remember like the first few minutes of the last episode where they're kind of just like hanging around, and I'm like, how do we like the giraffe thing? Like, how do they fit the giraffe thing and the thing with, you know, the fireflies? And I'm like, 40 minutes isn't enough. So when I saw like that's what the runtime was, I'm like, oh, like we're gonna just sprint for the finish line here.
Yeah. I did really enjoy the giraffe scene, and I found out apparently that was a real giraffe. Yeah, that was not CGI. Yes. Yeah, Bella Ramsey gave an interview. She said it was almost a spiritual experience for her to get to feed a live giraffe. And I mean, it's adorable because if you've ever seen giraffes being fed at the zoo, you know they do that with that long tongue of theirs and they just stick it out there. It's like, okay, put the food on it, put the food on it. Come on. That is the way giraffes act when they're hungry, and it's adorable.
And that's really an iconic scene from the game as well, that, you know, when you encounter the giraffe, because you go through so much crap right before you get to that giraffe scene, and just to, and it is time to breathe. Yeah. It's just kind of to decompress, because like I said, you go through a lot of stuff, you're on your edge, and then once you get through it, you come up on this giraffe, and it's like you're kind of expecting something horrible to happen. But you're in the moment. You're, because it's so much adrenaline's pumping through you. But then you get to see this and you get to experience it, and you kind of decompress and you're like, okay. In the cinematography in the game as well as this, it's almost shot for shot, and it's really off-putting. It kind of brings you back into humanity a little bit, and kind of makes you forget the outside world. And then when you go up, you see the entire, like, courtyard or is nothing but, like, wild animals and giraffes right now. It kind of lets you breathe. And that's a lot of times shows don't let you do that, especially like this last episode. You get that moment, and then you're, like, off to the races. There is no time to breathe. And I agree. There could have been – I feel that there at least should have been 2 episodes – filler, because the way that this ends is just like the ending of the game. It's very, very one weighs on your conscience and moral decisions, and it's a very heart-wrenching moment.
Yeah, that's what I hated about my son playing the game. I knew how this was going to end before I got to experience the end. And so all season, I'm like, I know how we're going to end up. I know how this is going to go. And I hated that because I didn't have the chance to experience the game and spoil the season of The Last of Us for me. But yeah, man, that was one of the big things I remember Caleb talking about, was how, you know, when this ends, the big decision that has to be made and how it goes down. But I won't skip ahead, Alexis. If you've got a plan to go somewhere else, go right ahead.
Well, actually, since we're talking about the ending, this wasn't the next question I was going to ask, but it's a good enough method to go on to, especially while we still got Andrew here. So this is a question that was asked when the game was released, and it's a question that was asked after the season finale. And as people who are familiar with the game, not familiar with the game, knew the ending before it was coming, I want to ask you, were Joel's actions justified? I see a shake, I see a nod, and I see a why the hell did you ask that mode.
I'm sorry, Alexis. It's just that when the game came out originally, like I was on a lot of social media. And I just remember this was a question that just dominated the conversation for like a couple, like at least a month or more. And it's like, it's kind of like the spinning top thing in Inception. Did it fall over? Yeah. Did it not fall over? It's like the thing where it's like, we're like, I don't know. Like it's
in the question in the game. Well, I was going to say, in the game, can you make the decision not to do what he did? Or is this something that is on rails?
The only decision you can make, and it's, as Alexis would say, the word superfluous, she likes to use that word, is whether or not you kill the nurses. That's optional. Yeah. You don't have to. You only have to kill the doctor. Right. You don't have to kill the nurses. You can kill them if you want, but you can just pick her up and leave with them alive.
Well, the surgeon has to be killed to set up the second game.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's an emotional, right? It's an emotional question. Logic kind of goes, I mean, the stoic logical answer would be he was wrong, but the emotional moral, well, maybe not even moral, but the emotional fatherly answer would be like, yeah, it was. I mean, the question really isn't whether or not what he did was right or wrong, but it's actually, would you do the same thing he did? I think.
Oh, yeah.
Man. That's a tough one.
I would have been like Rambo in there, but nobody would have made it out alive except for me.
The whole season, though, you're just cargo. You know, that was the initial feeling from Joel to Ellie, and then of course he grows on her.
This
is a broken man we're talking about, a man who watched his own daughter die, and that's gotta mess with your head. So,
that's why I say that he made the right choice, because, like you said, in his mind, this is cargo. I have an objective. I have to do it. Get point A to point B. But in that time, and it did a really good thing. It does a really good thing in the game. They bond. He sees his daughter and the mistakes he made with her that led to her getting killed. He sees, and it starts growing. Ellie starts growing. And then when you see, especially when he has to rescue her from the fire, from the cult, you see how much he's changed. She's not just cargo anymore. He is invested in her. He has taken her as his own to mend a broken man, I guess you could say. She has filled that void that when his daughter died, that he was left broken. He tried to commit suicide. It mentions it early on. She keeps asking about the scar. And then finally he opens up and says, I shot somebody. And he said, I was shot. And he said, well, did she shoot back? He said, no, I'm not that good of a shot. And that plays up in, that kind of resonates. And then when he goes on and talks about the scars from him trying to commit suicide. You know, because Joel is this really stoic, hardcore, emotionless body embodiment of, like I said, cargo A to B. But then you start seeing the human side, and those walls start coming down the more time he spends with her. And he realizes that, you know, and this is little things, like he's deaf in one ear. I don't know if you guys picked up on that in the show.
You mentioned that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't catch if he was totally deaf or just really had really poor hearing. And because I remember him mentioning it was like it's due to all the shooting. You're around a gun that much, you're going to lose your hearing.
Yeah, and you know, and he comes to rely on her being an extension of him to keep him safe as much as she's relying on him. And they kind of have that bond. And when he's like trying to put off on her, like, I don't want to talk to you or anything. And then she goes to the punts and starts telling the jokes. And he's just like, no, just... And she wears him down to where that parental instinct kicks in and he accepts her to help him mend the broken man he was when he lost his daughter.
I love that line you're talking about when he finally talks about the gunshot and she's like, oh, like time heals all wounds. And he's like, it wasn't time that did it. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a really great line. All right, let's go ahead and move on to some of the villains that we got in the show. Because again, like I said, we see the infected not a fair amount, but a couple of times. But I would say we have three main antagonists in this actual series. Aside from those who are zombified, we got Kathleen. We got, was it James or was it David? It was David. Okay, I hate to say it. I kept getting their names mixed up on who was who. And we got the Fireflies at the end. Let's go ahead and talk about that. First of all, who was your favorite antagonist of those three? Let's see here. Jason, why don't you go ahead and start?
I'm going to say the Fireflies because just like any good villain, they think that their actions are justified. And there's some truth in that. It's like I say all the time, it's what perspective you follow as a who's your hero. Like if you went through, you know, I hate to bring it up, Walking Dead, if you was following Negan the whole time, you would feel like Negan and the Saviors were the heroes and Rick and him was the villains. It all matters in perspective, who you follow, who you connect with. So the Fireflies, to me, they felt justified killing a little girl for the hopes of creating a cure. And some of the shady stuff they do is really shady. But they feel justified in it. So that's what I feel makes a good villain. If you can justify your actions and make the audience believe that there's some truth behind, if you're being this type of person, the cynical person, this evil person, for the greater good, that is what you need to have as a greater villain.
All right, well said. Jesse, what do you think?
I'll go with Kathleen. I've been watching Yellow Jackets, so I don't know if you guys
have seen it. Such a good show.
Yeah, it's a great show, man. And the actress plays Kathleen is on there, and very similar, it seems like, timid housewife kind of feel at initially. Of course, you don't really get that a whole lot here because she's usually packing a gun pointed at somebody. But regardless, she got this, she had this like, okay, I didn't understand how she was the leader of this pack of people, but she was able to pull it off somehow. And driven by revenge, just so she could find, was it Henry? Mm-hmm. Just so she could find Henry and put a bullet in his head because of what happened. And then, of course, I mean, she's got this practically an army behind her to go and find him. I dug her. I like her as an actress, too. She pulls off, you know, she pulls pulls off her timid act pretty well, but she, I'd go with her, Kathleen.
All right, and Andrew.
I thought David was pretty good. Actually, I really liked David. I didn't like him as much as his portrayal in the game. I think this is one of the instances where the game did do it better. I think, because in the game he feels much more kind of slimy. Like they didn't show it in the show, but like when he's in the show, they did the thing where Ellie and him are waiting in the sawmill for the guy who Troy Baker plays goes gets the medicine. In the game, like you and David as Ellie, you're holding off like a swarm of clickers and infected. And so like you kind of, that's, to me, it seems more believable that you would bond with this guy who you just had this experience with in terms of like survival and stuff. So it seems much more natural for that kind of, for her to be like groomed or lured in kind of. Sure. But I think of the show villains, he seemed the most interesting and the most kind of like that dark turn of going from somebody who he said he was like a teacher or something. Now in education. So I thought I was like, oh, okay, this is a guy who like adapted. He had to adapt in this new world where he talks like that he's not initially religious. It was the whole like infected thing. They've kind of made him like turn towards God. But he kind of has like a dark, sinister edge to that where he kind of uses it as more of a like for authority rather than like actually like shepherding to his like, you know, his flock and stuff. Like it's
right,
it's very eerily, if you guys have ever played Far Cry 5, it kind of reminds me of Joseph Seed, like someone who uses religion as like a weapon kind of. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But yeah, that whole episode with the flaming diner and the stabbing, and like I thought that was like one of my favorite more actiony kind of episodes. The implication of like you're about to get carved open and like throw, you know, you're gonna be next tomorrow's like dinner kind of thing, like that's so terrifying. Like it's like kind of reminds me of like Hostel or like Saw kind of, just that whole, it just gave me like goosebumps. So I think David for me, it takes a cake.
All right, hello, we got three different answers, and you guys are all correct, because we have very different motivations for all three of them, and I think all of the actors really sell that. So, and Andrew, you also did point kind of a fun little trivia note that the voice actors from Joel and Ellie in the video game do have cameos in this. Troy Baker is James. He is David's right-hand man. And Ashley Johnson, the voice of Ellie, is Ellie's mother in the final episode.
Yeah. Does she not look just like a grown-up Ellie?
Yeah,
I mean, that's what my wife said. I don't know.
Unreal.
She said, I don't know who did this casting, but whoever it did, my wife thought it was actually the actress that plays Ellie. It was actually her mom.
Like aged up or something? Yeah.
Well, I mean, they thought it was actually her mom that they just cast in a cameo. You.
That scene was so distracting because I would you hear her speak, I'm like, that's just Ellie speaking.
It's crazy because my son says it and I'm like, he's confused. I was like, whoa, wait a second. I get online and I start to realize, yeah, he is exactly like, immediately he could tell.
Yeah.
Immediately.
When it popped up, I kind of did a double take toward the TV and I was like, that's, and Amber was like, is that her real mom? I was like, I don't think so. I said, I think that's Ellie from the game. She said, she's like, I don't know why they would do that. And then we watched it on HBO Max and it had had like a little post thing of the episode. And it was like, it said that she's like, she's like, I really thought that was her mom. She's like, I thought they gave her mom a cameo. And I was like, it looks crazy. Like a lot.
They did a couple of fun cameos where Kathleen's lieutenant, that guy, he's the voice actor for Tommy in the game. The guy who was walking around with the facial hair. The actress that plays Marlene, she's the original actress from the game playing the same role as the voice actress. So that was cool that they brought her back to play the exact same role like a decade later.
Well, speaking of voice actors, we did also have an episode that was dedicated to the memory of the actress who voiced Tess in the original game. She sadly passed away.
Where is she?
Very recently. So
I loved her in 24. Great show.
Oh, God, I love that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some things. I think so. Yeah, the show did it better than the game from time. Yeah, I agree.
Very true.
Well, you had a bet. You had a bigger budget. So yeah, because I mean, you got to think when Last of Us first came out, it was a risk. They didn't think that it was going to be that big of a, you know, they they was known for it, but you know, you can't always predict how a video game will be received.
Right. Well, so question for the panel here.
Mm-hmm.
Best video game adaptation.
TV show or movies?
Either. It does this take the cake? Like you're like, hey, I wanna watch something that represents what I'm watching or what I'm playing on. Is this it?
This is the closest thing you'll get to following source material.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Cheap plug, Jesse.
And then even the changes they made sense for the reality of the show. Like, for example, like they took out the spores, which is like a big part of the game where like you have to wear gas masks because that's how the fungus spreads, right? It throws out spores.
That's the main reason that we have the parasitic fungi. And if you guys are ever studying like biology in real life, mm-hmm. biology in real life, that sounded so stupid.
No, we study it in
video game biology.
Yeah. Okay. There are parasitic fungi who take over smaller creatures, usually insects. And among the main things they make them do is travel to a higher ground area where they mm-hmm. can essentially kill the insect, body bursts open, and the spores are released. A higher point allows for a wider dispersal of the spores.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, that is what if a fungus could want something. If a fungus had feelings, then that is what they would do. They would want to do that. But you're right, Andrew. They couldn't do the gas mask because then you have Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey running around 9 episodes in freaking gas masks.
Right. I think Pedro is probably a little upset with, or at least done with masks for a while, I would figure.
Helmet, yeah.
The main reason why I came on this show, we're going to get into, hopefully Alexis has it set up for me to discuss a little later on.
You know what, Jason? Why don't the platform is yours, my friend. Go ahead. Okay. I acquiesce to what you have to say.
All right, so this is getting a lot of backlash, and for no good reason. There's a lot of hate online from the non-observant people that goes into the aspect of this whitewashing characters, not having people of color representative, but yet they fail to realize... Pasco's not white. Some of the best written characters in the show, his daughter was originally mixed. And you know, that's what goes. But there is a lot of backlash saying that people of color is not being represented properly in this, which I find really hilarious because of, you know, your main protagonist is not white. You have a very diverse cast of people through there. You don't have, like, you know, you're not putting a person of color as the evil villain or anything. I think it does a great job of balancing everything, but this goes to show, no matter how good the show is, you're not going to please everyone. Somebody's always going to have a negative turn and try to make agenda out of it. Just like in the show and the flashback mall episode, I thought that pushed an agenda, but I think it was just for the trying to get you to care more about Ellie. And like I said, I think they kind of was over the top ham-handed in it. I think they could have went with the game a little bit more with that interaction and flesh that out a little bit more than what they did. But yeah, it just goes to show we loved, I mean, all four of us have, you know, gushed over our love for the show and how it was handled. You're not going to please everybody, and people will always try to weaponize their opinion and try to take something great and weaponize it.
You are correct about Pedro Pascal. He was actually born in Chile. Mm-hmm. The actor who plays his brother, Gabriel Luna, his parents are both of Mexican descent. So, So, yeah, the show and the game, I felt there were the game itself was also very well diverse. So, and yes, there were a handful of characters that they changed to a different race, if you will. And frankly, my opinion has always been, as long as it's not turned into an overarching plot thing, and as long as the actors are more than good enough, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, let me put it this way. There's been a lot of people complaining lately. We got the Percy Jackson TV series coming out on Netflix here pretty soon. And the actress who's going to play, I think her name is Annabeth, the female lead, is black. And a lot of people are saying they don't like this, not because it's like, oh, no, how dare you, you know, change the color. But because in the book, Annabeth is described as having fair skin and silver owl-like eyes. And they're just like, I don't really think that works for a person of darker skin. So, and maybe they found a workaround. Maybe they did. I don't know.
I mean, does it affect the plot, though? Like, is there a key element of the story that hinges on someone being, like, the right race or something?
I think in the Percy Jackson, she is actually the descendant of...
Athena.
Athena is what it is. And, you know, it's a plot point. It's basically a primary point of the character. You know, and this goes back to the whole... We won't go into it here, but the Little Mermaid thing right now. Yeah. You know, you have a lot of things, and this goes for Hollywood because why not? Hollywood wants to recycle a lot of things rather than come up with new stories.
Obviously.
And that's the problem. You could create new characters and keep certain characters the same, but create a whole new plot, character, storyline, but rather than just recycling things and just race swapping. And I think that creates a lot of tension, a lot of diversity, because some things are sacred cows and shall not be touched. And when they are, you have tremendous backlash.
Very true. All right. I think we're getting pretty close here to wrapping things up. So I think the next question I want to ask you guys, and this may end up being the last question, is a little on the generic side, but I want to hear what you say. And again, Andrew, I know that you got to get out of here in like, what, just a few minutes or so?
15 minutes.
Oh, 15. Okay, you said you had an hour, so I would keep
I meant to say I have like a little over an hour is what I meant to say.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Sorry. I thought you said an hour, so I was like, oh, God.
I realized. I was looking at the message again. I'm like, oh, I did say that. I meant like a little over an hour, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, let's just go ahead and ask the question that everyone asks. What was your favorite episode?
Oh, man. Okay.
The intro. The pilot.
First one was really good. That first one was really good. It's not my favorite, but it's really mine was good. It hooks you.
It's the longest one for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me it's a tie between 3 and 8. Like I just really liked everything involving David, and I really liked everything involving Bill and Frank. So I think 3 and 8 are tied for me for my favorites.
I'm going to go with Endure and Survive, where we get the bloater. Not you, Teasley. But the bloater shows up, and I mean, just everything hits the fan. It feels like you get just everything you wanted. You get an action scene. You get this real big tragedy that happens at the very end. You know, it watching Joel from, like, the upstairs room or wherever he was at sniping those clickers and just taking everybody out and trying to keep Ellie safe, and then at the very end, what was the boy's name again? It was Henry and Sam.
Sam
getting bit and turning at the very end of that, and then watching Henry have to kill his own brother and then take his own life. I mean, what an insane ending to a show. But yeah, that one right there. That's my favorite.
The bloater lived. And the bloater.
I mean, I don't know. I assume it takes a lot to take those things down.
A lot of bullets.
He moseyed on out of the screen, and which is a key that a lot of people missed. They thought that, you know, it was defeated and it died, but, you know, and I went back and watched it for a second time and I was like, well, yeah, it just takes off in the opposite direction and rips the guy in half.
He's wrecking stuff. I mean, it is amazing the amount of damage this thing is doing by just throwing people and slamming them to the ground. And you only get what? That thing shows up for like maybe 5 minutes.
And that's generous.
Yeah, buddy.
For a show that like held back on the violence and gore and like we like cut away whenever possible, I was surprised they actually showed like the bloater actually did the thing he does from the game where he grabbed the guy's like head and just like ripped it off, just like split it open. I was like, oh crap, like they actually showed that part.
I know, man. That's why I was all into that one. I was like, here we go. This is what I wanted to see. And just to watch that army fall because it just gets completely overrun.
It gets decimated. I mean, because that, like, once that thing opens and all those clickers come out, which my wife is scared to death of and has already stated that the rumor of a Last of Us house at Halloween Horror Nights this year, she will not go through it simply because she is scared to death of clickers. It's the bloaters. She's fine with the bloaters. The clickers, she is freaked out and scared to death.
That guttural Sonic.
I gotta ask. Okay, how does she feel about just the general infected before they become?
Oh, it doesn't bother her. But the clickers, the sound, and the makeup. Which little tidbit, my daughter is wanting to go into special effects makeup.
Oh, wonderful!
And we're actually when we go down to Orlando, we're actually going to see a school down there. Me and her is going to go out to a school and kind of look around and tour it and get some information. Cause that's what she wants to go into. And so, she watched it and she was like, oh, I want to do that. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, if could I do that for Halloween Horror Nights? And I was like, I don't know. Can you? She's like, I want to try it.
Yeah. She's like, it's like, sweetie, I don't know if you asked the right question there. I mean, if you can do it.
Yeah. And like she, this past Halloween, she went, she did a full makeup of Tate from season one of American Horror Story. And it looked really good. And I think that she has a gift for it. So I want her to explore that creativity and I will support it. But yeah, when she seen that, she was hooked. She was like, I want to do that. That looks so cool. And, you know, for seeing somebody that from that aspect that sees things differently than me, that likes to do season makeup, you know, I'm all for Halloween and thing and everything. And a lot of that was prosthetics. And you're like, this is really cool because this is practical.
You would see in the like post credits, they show you like the synopsis of the episode. And like, I remember for the second episode, they showed like a lot of these people just dress up as like the actual clickers, just walking around. And I'm like, oh crap, like that. It's not CGI. They're just, it just looks that good.
I think it is actually important to point out that you are correct. There is very little CGI and blue screen work done in this series. They did entirely practical effects. They did very little built sets. They shot on location in a lot of places. Little disappointed when I found out, again, I live in Kansas City, and when I saw the bridge and everything, I'm like, oh, that looks familiar. I know that bridge. But then I saw the houses that they're going around in, and part of me actually thought, I think I know those houses. Those look familiar. And then I looked, I'm like, oh, they filmed that scene in Calgary. Never mind.
Yeah.
It was like, it still looks like a neighborhood I might know. But yeah, this was shot almost entirely on location. Majority of the effects were practical. I seriously hope whoever did the makeup for this series gets accolades, gets a lot more recognition, because this is talent that we want to see, you know, get more work and flourish. This is amazing talent. All right, so did everyone talk about their favorite episode? Jesse, you talked about episode 5 with I hate to say it, talking about the army flooding, it's reminding me of our conversation of Hell of a Boss episode 6.
Yeah.
When IMP takes down the dorks.
Yep. It's good stuff. Go back in the archive, ladies and gentlemen. You should be able to find that episode. We had a fun time talking about it.
Oh, can't wait till we talk about season 2. Episode 3 just debuted. Have you seen it yet?
No, I got a binge. I've got a binge. I've been seeing people post stuff, though, so.
Oh, you're going to love it. It's hilariously over the top and violent.
Wonderful.
All right. So is there anything else anyone wants to discuss here about The Last of Us? Is there any key points that we have missed? Any specific scenes, episodes, character arcs that you really want to discuss?
I just wanted to say that this is probably one of the first post-apocalyptic like shows, which, my goodness, you could watch so many of those now. But this is like one of the ones that really made me kind of realize the horrible situation that people are in, where they can't find car batteries and they, you know, Joel has to go around duct taping his shoe just because there's no shoes out there for him to get for some reason. The really limited resources, which I'm sure has got to be something that's featured in the game too. I mean, Resident Evil was similar, where yes, you had to go around, you could only find, you know, so many bullets or whatever. That's kind of like the feel I got from this. They did a great job of getting that across, is what I'm trying to say. So that's really all I wanted to say.
Yeah, there's that one scene where, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, where when they get to the town, they get to the little wooden fortress town with Tommy. And then is it that same episode where she finds like the tampon or whatever, and she's like so relieved?
Oh, it's the cup.
Oh, there you go. Okay. I think
that's the first time I got to learn all about that. My wife chimed right in. I'm like, what in the world is okay?
I love that they actually point that out, because it's like, yeah, you know, just when the apocalypse happens, we're not going to stop getting our damn periods.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you have to deal with that somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my question is, I want to get everybody's take on, what expectations do you have for season 2?
Oh boy, you guys all have the game behind you, I'm sure. You guys have
I have not played 2.
Yeah,
I haven't played 2 either.
My son wants it, and he hasn't played it, so I don't know what's happening other than some of the big key things.
I know one major thing from 2, and I'm curious how it's going to be handled.
I am calling no spoilers on discussing game 2 or season 2, since at least 3 of us here are not totally familiar with it. So, but okay, Andrew, said you played
4 of us.
I played it. Yeah, I love 2. I actually like 2 way more than 1. And that's divisive to say, because a fan base is very, there's people who, there is no mixed feelings about 2. You either love it or you hate it for the same couple of reasons. But
so it's like Breath of the Wild fans. Got it.
No, isn't Breath of the Wild universally praised? I don't know. I never played it.
It's a joke because I have a lot of friends who actually can't stand Breath of the Wild, and it's for the exact same reason that people love Breath of the Wild.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's too open world for them. These are my friends who need a concrete plan for set goals in mind when playing a game. It's like, okay, I need to now go get this, and then I need to take it to this, and then I need to do this. Breath of the Wild is so open world, and you could literally spend the entire game out in the wild hunting and cooking food and doing and killing bad guys, whatever, and never actually get to the game. And for them, it just drives them nuts, because they need more direction when they play video games. And that's fine. If that's your cup of tea when you play games, then that's your thing. Go for it.
The only thing I have, I'm a little kind of cautious, a little trepidatious about is, and this isn't really a spoiler because it's like in the first, you could, it's on the cover of the game, really, yeah. I think, is Ellie is like 5 years older in the second game. She gets older and taller, and she's much more of a physical force in that game. And I'm like, I have no idea how you're going to do that with Bella Ramsey, because she's done growing as a person, like physically she's done growing. So I don't know how they're going, if they're not going to recast her, I don't know how they're going to like beef her up, so to speak.
Yeah, they won't. Yeah. I mean, they will somehow sidestep that. And they'll sidestep it well, is what I'm trying to say. I think they'll, if it's something that they have to overcome, these people behind this show
seem to know how to take care of those things and make sure that they put still have a good show on their hands.
Yeah, maybe give her stilettos or something. I don't know. Make
a, like stilettos. Stilettos in the zombie apocalypse.
No, not visible, obviously. You know what I mean? Like give her like I don't know. What's that thing they do for Tom Cruise? Supposedly, you know.
I was really concerned stilts? That.
There you go, stilts. That's what I meant. Stilettos. Stilt or something.
Stilettos, yeah. So the zombie, so the fungi has got fashionistas. But yeah, I think that the major thing that I'm with too is the big plot point and how it's going to be handled.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I think that's why it's a smart thing to spread it out over two seasons. Just I think to they hold that by some time.
I think that's going to be revealed in season three. But how much with there only being two games and we rushed through the first one in the first season, how much meat is on the bone for multiple seasons?
At the moment, I think three seasons is all they can really milk out of this. And Naughty Dog Productions has admitted the next game they're working on is not Last of Us 3. Yeah. I don't even think they've got Last of Us 3 in the pipeline at the moment.
They haven't confirmed that it's not. They just said, like, because there's an interview with Neil Druckmann after the finale, the season finale, where he's like, we know there's a lot of fans who want us to do Last of Us 3. He's like, we want to do our own thing. Like, we kind of just want to, but he doesn't confirm or deny. He's like, we're already well at work on the next title. And like, he doesn't say what it is. So
you need to strike while the iron is hot. While this property has that much eyes on it, and if you can somehow drum up a third game. But the thing is, it's like, if they haven't been working on it, it's going to take them years to get one finalized.
Well, there is a game that's coming out in between, or I don't know if it's in between exactly, but there is a Last of Us multiplayer game that's officially coming out within like this year or next year. Like, it's a multiplayer game. At least we don't know if it's multiplayer. Actually, it's actually at least co-op. That's what they confirmed. That's like you're playing with somebody else.
So they're doing something with it then. Okay,
they're doing something with
money
it.
On the table if they're not.
But we don't know if it's like Joel and Ellie like
right,
focused.
Right.
I think it's what I don't think that they can really do that. I think they would have to do something like a spinoff, kind of like they did, just kind of like a character that they can integrate later on, and not kind of mess with the core storyline, and they can just integrate them seamlessly, like have a parallel story going on to be able to be played.
Well, Telltale Walking Dead games were fun.
Those were so good coming out.
Right. In the beginning, they were great.
Well, we did discuss about getting more episodes out of background characters who, you know, much like Bill and Frank, were just, you know, tiny little side characters in the game, and we got a whole episode out of them. So it is possible that we make, I don't like using this term, but for a lack of better words, we may get more filler episodes of some of these back characters showing how they're surviving in the apocalypse. So that could be one way to kind of, and I'll just say this, as good as those could be, I do hope we don't get too many of them.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that could be one way that they space things out a little bit.
I got to bounce, so.
All right. Thanks for jumping
in, Andrew,
man.
Good seeing you, man.
Take care.
All right.
Have a good one, man.
All right. Thanks again.
Wish he had said something sooner. I didn't get a chance to have him do his plugs. Oops. All right. But either way, I think we're going to go ahead and start wrapping up here. Last of Us was phenomenal. We highly recommend checking it out. If you have played the game, if you haven't played the game, either way, this is a wonderful series. It is brilliantly acted and directed. And just go check it out. It's on HBO. All of the episodes are currently streaming on HBO Max. And yeah, if you want to go play the game, go play the game. It came out in 2013 on PS3. If you do not have a PS3, then it is available on PC for download. Go ahead and give it a shot through there. So, shall we go ahead and move on to plugs?
I'm ready.
I think we've covered everything we're gonna cover.
Like I said, if anyone else had anything that they wanted to add that I blatantly forgot or whatever. I don't know.
Nah, I'm pretty much covered everything I had anticipated to.
Same.
Yeah. Unfortunately, these shows are always a little shorter when we're all in agreement that something is awesome, because it's just like, how many times can we just say it's good? You know, either when there's a disagreement or when something is god awful, do we actually end up staying here for hours on end?
Yeah. I mean, this was a show that I wanted to talk about with somebody in our group. And that's why I sent the message. Of course, you know, I'd missed where you had asked originally about doing something for The Last of Us. And so I sent the message. I really want to talk about this. There needs to be a show. So I'm glad we got this together, because this is probably one of the better shows that I've seen in a few years for sure. So it deserves to be talked about.
Yeah, and it not only brought the hardcore fans to the series, it brought in a lot of casual fans that are just interested into the genre. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That are now probably going to seek out the game, both games, and follow the story and put a lot of more eyeballs onto video games as a whole as a means of branching out, because there are some great games that you could make stories out of and make shows and everything out of.
Last of Us, American Dreams, April 2013 to July of 2013, comic book that came out from Dark Horse. So there's comics, folks.
Only if we had Synergy on the
show. It's all gone now. Mark said no more Synergy.
Mark became social. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of games out there that would make really good TV shows or movies if you stay close to the source material. This is one of them. I said this at the top of the show. When it was announced with the track record of how themes are adapted, I had very low expectations. Welcome to Raccoon City. Jumps to the forefront that I was so excited about and so disappointed.
Well, I think it's fair to say that, you know, we've talked about this before on other reviews about various movies and TV shows and stuff, that there has always been this stupid idea that if a video game is adapted into another media, then it's cursed. And we have seen so many TV shows and movies based on video games just blow up in their faces. But I think recent years, with not just The Last of Us, we also got Arcane, we got the Sonic the Hedgehog movies. We've gotten so much proof that, you know what, there is no curse anymore. Things are better. I think we have a better understanding now of how we can adapt video games and make them enjoyable for diehard fans and for casual viewers.
Well, some things are still cursed, because for every Last of Us, we get the Resident Evil Netflix series. And I advise you, please, please save yourself time and energy. Do not even try to watch it, because you will not only hate life, you will hate me for even bringing it up for you even to seek out. And you will probably very be disgruntled and try to hunt me down for even putting that little earworm in your head for you to seek it out and try to watch it, because it is absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, that's why I'm thankful for the network here, because there are so many shows that I have not watched because these guys have.
Yeah, I watched it. I watched it, and I really wanted to stab my own eyes out with a saw.
Oh, is that bad? Oh, my goodness.
Like, okay, I'll put it to you like this. Take the worst Resident Evil movie. Good example. Take Raccoon City, Welcome to Raccoon City, and put it up against this. Welcome to Raccoon City is an Oscar contender.
Oh my God.
Oh, jeez. That had so much promise. Unreal.
Didn't Welcome to Raccoon City get like a 20 something on Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah, this guy, I'm pretty sure that this, the Netflix series, they put it into like some torture camps to make people watch, just so they would commit suicide.
Oh, Lord.
Like, I mean, it's, and like I said, I'm, I love raccoons. I love Resident Evil. I'm
you love wife, raccoons. Admit it. You know you love raccoons.
I do. Pandas. I do love raccoons. Trash pandas, as they're called. yeah, it is. It is like a. It's a 4.1 on IMDb. And they, Lance Reddick, it gets wasted as he plays the most iconic villain of the Resident Evil series, but he gets wasted playing Wesker. I looked at him being attached, him playing Wesker, had high hopes. By the first episode, you're like, it was heartbreaking. And Alexis, to put it in terms of what you understand, I would rather watch the new Pet Sematary with Winfrey sitting beside me with a megaphone than ever watch this Resident Evil again.
Oh my god.
Oh, Winfrey just yelling at you constantly.
Here's a comparison. Would you rather watch the new She-Ra and the Princesses of Power with Pat than watch this again?
Yes.
Okay. There's the line.
I would rather watch a gender swap, race swap Marvel movie with Pat. I would rather watch a gender swap Rocky movie with Pat than watch Resident Evil again.
Oh man.
Nothing like throwing our fellow contributors under the bus for a joke.
No, because Pat, there's holy grails. There's holy grails, and one of Pat's holy grails is Rocky.
Oh, sure. A great movie, yeah.
And I mean, the character of Rocky is one of Pat's holy grails because he's a boxing aficionado. And because he's a boxer himself, but Pat's feels very strongly about certain topics. And I would rather, okay, not to get kicked off. This will ring even better. I would rather attend a gay pride parade with Pat than sit through that series.
I'm pretty sure Pat just felt a chill go down his spine from that sentence. Yes.
So. So
like somewhere else in America, Pat just sat up and he's just like, "What the hell
force,
is that?"
There's a disturbance in the force. But yes, that's how bad this is. I would rather do the most hated thing on earth. I would rather be awake for a colonoscopy than watch the new Resident Evil series.
Oh well,
there's my plugs.
Jason Teasley hates Resident Evil, the Netflix series. Oh man!
Well,
did you guys review it? I have no idea.
Oh no!
You
know? There was talks about it. I made it halfway through the first episode, and I told Mark that if he values his life, we will never speak of this again.
Yeah, since I've taken over running TV Party Tonight, I basically told Mark, is like, look, unless it's something that's really good, really is going to make waves and get us a lot of views, or it's just something that we feel needs to be discussed, it's not going on the schedule. I don't want to make you guys watch a million other TV shows that are just meh or even bleh. You know, I mean, again, occasionally we watch shows that we know are probably not going to be that good, but it's because they're going to have a larger impact. We know that people are going to be talking about them. We know that this is something that is major to current pop culture, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it fits. Not reviewing shows just to review shows, I think, kind of oversaturates things, and you kind of lose people wanting to do those shows. It's kind of hard to get people on to do those.
Well, that, yeah. We all have actual jobs and families, and it's lives. Like, it's like I can only binge Last of Us so many times.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, there's plenty of shows out there, but going back to the thing, Jesse, there's a running joke with me, Robert, and Alexis, is when we did the Pet Sematary review, we spent about 20 minutes talking about the movie, and the other hour and a half, we talked about the upcoming chapter two would be it chapter two. And we talked about other movies other than Pet Sematary, the remake of Pet Sematary. That's how bad it was.
It wasn't so much it was bad, it was bland. We had very little to talk about. So, we ended up spending most of it talking about other Stephen King adaptations.
Which, if you haven't seen Castle Rock, highly recommend.
You're talking about Castle Rock, the 90s movie?
No, it's the...
you're talking about Hulu, Hulu show.
Yeah,
the
show.
That's really good, dude.
The Stephen King universe.
And
I'm getting ready to start something that actually Alexis and Robert both have suggested to me at different times. Lovecraft Country.
Oh, yes.
That
was my introduction to Jonathan Majors as an actor. And if you loved him in Creed 3, and I think we all agreed he was like the saving grace of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, then you are going to love him in this.
Yeah. Like I said, you and Robert both have mentioned it to me at different times that it's a really good show. So I was looking for something to watch and that came up. And so we're going to binge it over the weekend.
Oh, you're going to love it. It's weird. It's very weird, but it's really good.
Okay. I like weird. So,
just scanning through this American Dreams, Dark Horse, The Last of Us series. And there's four issues. I'm in the fourth issue, and all it is really the episode where Ellie and his girl or her friend go to the mall.
Oh, Riley. Yeah. That episode, I believe, was DLC, actually based off of DLC content.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because I was going to say it's in the comic, which is pretty. So obviously must have been part of the game, I assume, at some point. They set this comic up as like a prequel to the game, which it's essentially that episode. Interesting.
Yeah, I will say I really did enjoy that episode. And a lot of that I attribute to Storm Reid, the actress who played Riley, who I have seen in several movies lately. I think she's one of the best up-and-coming actresses we've seen in recent years. And I know we'd still love making fun of A Wrinkle in Time, but she was terrific in that. I have no problems with her participation in that movie. We can continue to make fun of Reese Witherspoon turning into romaine lettuce until the cows come home.
Another movie I haven't seen because of you guys.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it either. Nor do I have any desire to see it.
You're not missing anything. Again, you know, she is really good in it. She plays the lead, but the movie is not enjoyable. You know, we've talked before, Jason, you and I have talked so many times on Damn You Hollywood about how there's so many movies where it's like, well, I want to trash everything, but there was one actor in it who did a really good job, and I don't feel right trashing them. And that is from Reed and Wrinkle in Time.
You don't necessarily like the movie itself, but there's that one outstanding shining glimmer of hope that like you're like they did the best they could with the material. Their portrayals shine through outside of the everything else. So we've talked about that. It's going to be interesting. I don't think that I'm back on a show for quite some time. I think I'm actually absent till I come back on the 3rd of April when me and Mark, I'm doing two shows that week. Me and Mark will be here for a long road ruin of the 48 hours films. And then on the 6th, somehow I convinced Mark to do a triple feature about horror. So we're doing Sick, Children of the Corn 2023, and There's Something Wrong with the Children on April 6th. So, that's then you could find me over at Mosaic Media for fantasy football content.
Say you're doing Children of the Corn?
Yes, we're doing the 2023 Children of the Corn.
I will pray for you.
have you seen it?
No, I saw a couple early reviews of it, and I saw it score on Rotten Tomatoes. That was enough.
Oh, really? Oh, boy. I'm really curious because, and why Mark has, he has, and then in the notes, he has Sick, Children of the Corn, and Boston Strangler, but he's got there's something wrong with the children in the title. There's something on
Boston Strangler.
I don't know what he's thinking. Listen, so.
I listened to a couple guys' podcast in Columbus, and they absolutely love that movie and quote it all the time. But from what I understand, it's pretty schlocky. So have fun.
Well, I mean, Children of the Corn.
Oh, you know what? I'm getting that confused with the Greasy Strangler. Go ahead.
Oh, well.
You know, Stranglers.
The Jesse, we don't need to know about your sex life.
You ever do a little Greasy Strangler?
I'm sure I have not. I've done the Alabama Hot Pocket.
So Loki.
So plugs.
All right. You know what? Why don't we take a break here from Jason's little diatribe there, Jesse? What do you got coming up, man?
Well, my goodness, I just looked at the schedule. Apparently, next Monday, I have myself and Chris Armstrong talking Turok number one, and turns out I've got to edit that this weekend. So, surprise! But I will tell you. Tomorrow morning, you should be able to wake up and find on the Source Material Comics feed myself and Evan Bevins talking Marvel Snap. Yes, we've decided we are going to monthly get together and just talk about some of our fun interaction previous season and the following season, upcoming season, I should say, in Marvel's mobile game. Marvel Snap. So if you play the game, check it out. Me and Evan, I think I'm dropping like 4 20-minute episodes where we're just talking about some of the fun stuff we've run into, the cards we unlocked. So that'll be happening on the Source Material Comics feed. Just recently, you can hear me doing a solo episode on Superman versus Shazam. That's right. Who's going to win? Tune in and find out. From 1978.
Nobody, because they don't like to declare winners.
Exactly right. Teasley doesn't even have to read the comic or listen to the podcast. He knows the ending. That is exactly correct. But what kind of crazy shenanigans could possibly happen in When Earths Collide? Well, tune in and find out. It's already on the Source Material Comics feed. So that's kind of all I have going on right now. Me and Mark are going to be recording this coming Sunday 3 episodes back-to-back of some stuff we're doing for Source Material, all based on Metal Comics. And let me tell you something. The Guar comic is some of the greatest stuff I've ever read.
Doubt that.
No, trust me, sir. Trust you me. It is some of the... Hey, one... No, I'm not going to give it away. You'll have to tune in and listen. But yeah, the Slayer Repentless comic, oh my goodness, it is the worst dreck I've ever read. So we have 3 episodes coming at you. It'll be a lot of fun. Me and Mark cutting it up. That right there is all I have.
All right. Well, Mark's actually got me coming on quite a bit here coming up soon. I will be coming back on Tuesday to discuss Shazam, Fury of the Gods with Robert. And I think, Mark, Jason, you weren't on for that one, huh?
No, I have no desire to be on Shazam because I have no interest in watching a subpar movie and reviewing it. And
shots fired.
And listening to Robert annihilate it when I can do it from the comfort of my own home at my own leisure and probably have a better time with the movie Shazam and the Fury of the Gods.
If you don't want to sit through a subpar movie, then why'd you review Scream 6?
Well, it wasn't bad. I mean, it's probably my third favorite Scream.
Well, out of 6, that's pretty good. That's right in the middle.
Yeah, I just couldn't resist the obvious joke because, yes, last night, Mr. Teasley and I did sit in on a discussion of the new Scream movie. We talked about the ups and the downs and how Ghostface really needs to come up with something better than knife in gut, because it's getting kind of old.
Well, we're seeing it's not killing people now. They can live through getting their stomach penetrated with a knife.
Unbelievable. Yeah, Jenna Ortega falls on a 6-inch blade in her abdomen. Now she's just going to walk that off.
Or somebody gets stabbed in the subway and gets not only the knife to the stomach, it gets lifted about 3 inches into her stomach and she's fine.
Hey, way to go.
Yeah, I mean, plot armor at its finest.
Pretty plot much. Armor. Yeah. Do you need your emotional support knife?
I need my emotional support knife. Yes, I do. My emotional support killer.
All right. So, yes, we got that. April 5th, I will also be coming back to discuss History of the World Part 2. I don't actually know who's on for that. Mr. Zachary Strobel said he wanted to, but I know that is the first sign of Passover, so he may be busy. Gave him a hard time because, like, dude, I brought you on because I need a Jew to discuss Mel Brooks films. And it's like, and then he's got to go do friggin' Passover. What are the odds?
Don't get Ronnie Adams on there on a Mel Brooks show with me. It ends badly. Just ask Jesse.
No, Ronnie Adams and I are actually going to be coming in together earlier than that because we're going to both be discussing Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves. Because look, you don't discuss Dungeons & Dragons on this network without bringing in Ronnie.
Ronnie Adams. He is the DM.
Yeah, it's actually fun. I don't think Ronnie and I have worked together previously, and if we have, I do not remember. So yeah, it's gonna
say Teasley and I have.
Yeah,
quite a bit.
He's the only person that has made me rage quit a show, and he's the only person that I've been able to carry a conversation on after I took a 30-minute nap in the middle of a show.
Oh man,
when him and Adam started talking about Star Wars, and I took a nap and woke up and picked up right. Talking about Carnage where we left off.
All right, so we got that. Mr. Starcher, I know that we had talked about coming back for Trip to Trivia this month, but I think it got a little away from us. We could still do it next weekend, though, if you think we could get the questions and some contestants.
Oh, boy, that'd be a tough one. What do you think? Here's the thing. With Saturdays now, I have started doing overtime. Now, that doesn't mean that completely wipes out every Saturday from here on out. But I will tell you, that would be too much of a crunch probably for me. I think April would probably be a good time. How is con season? I know con season starting to ramp up, right? Are you starting to, I saw you were at a con here recently, right?
I was. And that actually moves on to the plugs that pay my bills, because Lord knows Mark's not going to. That's Honeysuckle Rose Creations, where fashion meets fandom at the intersection of geek and chic. This last weekend, we were at LPL Con in Lawrence, Kansas. This weekend, we're going to be at Planet Comic Con in Kansas City. This is our favorite show, our home show. We never miss it. So excited. And after that, yeah, we actually don't have any conventions in April, believe it or not.
We got to get a Saturday together then.
All right, then let's hold off on March then, because I know that we agreed that March, if we could get it together, we would do Dungeons & Dragons themed trivia, which, because to tie into the movie, but if we're going to skip that, then I think we've agreed there is only one true theme we can do for April, and that is to celebrate the Super Mario Brothers movie coming out. We're going to do Nintendo trivia.
We are hooked on the brothers.
I may be interested in that.
Be fun, man.
Love to have you on.
As I am the only two-time.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Trivia champion.
Here he is, folks.
The one, the only, the pillar of the network.
Oh, wow.
Mr. JMT. Play on the JF.
I mean, it's been so long since we've done a tripped up trivia that I almost forgot about that. Almost.
Well, almost. I will never let you forget to remember that.
I know you wouldn't, Teasley. I know that. You wouldn't.
All right. So, you know what, folks? Let's go ahead and shoot that. Tripped Up Trivia is going to debut but our comeback is going to be in April. The theme is going to be everything Nintendo. Super Mario Brothers, Metroid, Legend of Zelda, Donkey Kong, and all those other classics.
Excite Bike.
Wait Excite till I Bike. Bust out the triple hard trivia on Excite Bike.
All right. Ooh, how about some Mega Man?
Ooh, trust I love me. Mega Man. Mega Man was one of my favorite game series until
first game
it was
I ever bought.
It was Resident Evil for me before Resident Evil.
Nice.
Very nice. Yeah. All right, so yep, that's what we're going to shoot for. If you think that you can best Mr. Teasley here with your knowledge of Nintendo trivia, hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. Let us know.
Three times. That's what I'm going to say. Three times.
Sit down, Teasley.
Three times. Yeah.
All right. Hit us up on Facebook or Twitter if you want to play. We are looking for other contestants to put this man where he belongs, in the corner.
And they will etch my name in the pillars of the Rad Legion Broadcasting Network.
The pillars of the network are like 2 inches tall.
Just know this. It's been almost 9 years, and Mark has yet to live down that me and Melissa put on the highest rated show ever on the network.
Touche.
And you want to know who would be king of Rad Legion Broadcasting trivia?
That would Teasley. Be you.
No, Teasley. Teasley knows. Teasley has so many moments and knows a lot. Trust me.
My drunken escapades during a draft.
Yep.
Falling asleep during a Mortal Kombat review.
Yep.
I used to be as bad as falling asleep as Mark.
You falling asleep should be on the bingo card.
That is one of the ones.
Yeah, you two are a pair of Jigglypuffs, that's for damn sure.
The best thing though was that time with Ronnie and Adam that I actually took a 30-minute nap in the middle of a show, woke up and picked up right where we left off.
No clue.
And the funniest thing ever is the night me and Jesse was trying to, we were all amped up. We're gonna live stream the draft. Jesse said, "I'll be right back. I'm gonna go put the kid to bed." I was like, "All right." He said, "Only thing he heard was he came down. I was drunk, and he heard, 'Thank you for choosing Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.'"
I couldn't. Yeah. Teasley had ended the show. Ended the show. It's not like I took forever. He ended the show in a small, because I'm conscious. I understand that, you know, I've got another person sitting there waiting to do a podcast for me. So I'm going to quickly go upstairs and come right back. And by the time I got back, he had ended the show because his drunk ass was too tired to continue.
Only thing you hear was, "I'm too drunk. Fuck it." And I just end the show.
I had to tune in later after it uploaded to figure out what the hell happened.
The Chiefs seats was a good time.
Yes, it was.
All right. Well, I think we've prattled on here enough. So, yes, for Mr. Teasley, for Mr. Starcher, I am Alexis Hanson. Be well, behave, be safe, and remember, when you're lost in the darkness, you know what? Don't look to us. We don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Nope.